Well, now a realistic look at death in the mortuary business with Caitlin Doty, author of a new book, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. One of Caitlin's missions is to better prepare all of us for the deaths of friends and loved ones and our own eventual deaths. Smoke Gets in Your Eyes is something of an unusual coming-of-age story that talks about Caitlin's first 6 years in the funeral industry. Caitlin Doty is also the founder of the Order of the Good Death, a group of funeral industry professionals, academics, and artists who focus on the rituals families perform with their dead and how the industry disposes of dead bodies. She's also starting her own funeral service in Los Angeles called Undertaking LA that will help families and planning after they lose a family member. And Caitlin, so good to have you back here in Kansas City. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for taking a break from politics to talk death.
It's hard for us to do sometimes, but here we are. Yeah. And you have your mom here today with you all the way from Hawaii. Right?
She is. She went to Leavenworth High School. Yeah. So it was her 50th high school reunion.
That's fun.
I know. It was really fun. And she got to see the radio station. And this is all very exciting.
Oh, that's great. That's so good. Well, maybe the place to begin is where you began in your book, which is with your first day at Westwind Cremation and Burial out in California. Why did you want to work there?
Well, I had an academic interest in death, and I thought I had a very highfalutin anthropological interest in the death industry and how we handle death and our death fears. And so I started applying at crematories, and then somebody actually hired me to be a crematory operator, to be the one who comes in and actually cremates the dead body. And I came in, and I knew sort of logically what to expect, but when you grow up in America, you don't have access to real dead bodies. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. So everything ended up being entirely shocking, I guess you could say.
Well, you didn't have any experience at the time, which was your trouble landing a job. Why did this place take a flyer on Caitlin Doty?
I think they initially intended to hire someone else, but it didn't work out at the last minute. So I showed up and I was clean cut and really enthusiastic. And yes, I'd love to be in the death industry. And I think it was kind of a fluke, but one that has paid great dividends in my own life.
Well, I love the story that you begin this book with, which is on your first day, you had to shave the face of a dead man, and you call him Byron in the book. And I was struck by the fact that you point out your supervisor, a man named Mike, was watching you very closely as you approached this particular body and began to work on it. What was going on there?
Well, Mike is the kind of guy who is completely no-nonsense. He had no time for me to come in and say, what is this body? What is death? What is truth in the modern age?
He didn't want to deal with your emotions about death.
No, he had no time for that at all.
We got stuff to do.
And he had been through he was the crematory manager, and he had been through so many crematory operators at that point, so many people who couldn't handle it or were just there because they thought it was going to be cool or weird or kooky or scary.
And his patience level with that was
his patience level was, yeah. Nada. Mm-hmm. So he was just sort of looking at me saying, all right, I'm going to throw you into the ocean here. If you paddle back, we'll keep you on. And if you don't, you just drift out to sea and that's it. So the first task was, here's a dead body, shave him, because he had a viewing later that afternoon and the family wanted him to look more clean cut as he had been in life. Yeah. So there I was with a razor alone with a dead body, and it was like, welcome to the funeral industry. Here you are.
And as you worked on Byron, you were being watched closely by Mike to see how you were going to approach this task. How did you know what to do, having never done it before?
Well, yeah, I'm not a man, so I've never shaved my face. I did know how to use a razor because I shaved my legs, okay. I guess. And it's weird. On a dead body, on one hand, you can't hurt them, which is a pro for shaving them. But on the other hand, if you nick them, you can't fix that. It's not like their skin heals. They probably have a viewing that afternoon. So you have to be really careful. So just a lot of moisture, a lot of shaving cream, very small, delicate strokes.
Why weren't you freaked out by that task?
Oh, I was. I was certainly freaked out. I was certainly freaked out by that task.
You cover it up in the book pretty well. I mean, you don't really talk about how you felt.
I guess I was freaked out, but I knew that the overall mission that I was on to face this and to become more comfortable and to realize that historically, we for hundreds of years of American history even, we were comfortable with the dead body. The dead body was something we had in our homes. It was something that we took care of and had the responsibility of ourselves. And the fact that I was this 23-year-old girl awkwardly standing over this body that I had never, this person I had never met before, is a weird part in our cultural history. And I guess the desire to understand that made me want to overcome those fears.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this in our first half as we talked about the history of Union Cemetery in Kansas City. Why did we change as a society and as a culture from going from a place where we were comfortable with death, or far more comfortable, to where we are today, which is, you know, the idea of you going in and shaving the face of Byron, you know, would freak out 90% of the population these days.
Yeah, it's fascinating how for some people it's this beautiful, sacred task, and for other people, ugh, icky, you did what? That's grotesque.
Yeah.
I think that there's really two main things that, I mean, there's a whole plethora of things, but two main things we can point to. One is that the dying people were taken out of the home with hospitals and medicalization. And around the same time, this is the early 1900s, the dead body was taken out of the home to funeral homes. So you had this rising class of professionals, both medical professionals and death care professionals, who said, no, no, these processes that happened at home for all of human history, they shouldn't be at home. They're not for the home. They're for professionals. And that's really what, and nobody's advocating we go back to a time of insanely high infant mortality rates or anything. But there's a lot that we can still do as a community, as a family, that we're just handing off to professionals to do.
So what made you think that you could walk into that that mortuary and do that kind of work and be able to handle it? What was it about your own constitution that clearly you understood about yourself that made you able to do that?
I mean, it was probably some hubris, some millennial 23-year-old hubris going on, if we're being honest. I had, again, the academic background that made me look at it or want to look at it from above, as opposed to, some sort of morbid curiosity, which not a morbid curiosity is not a bad thing, especially in a culture where we're kept so far. And I guess I didn't totally know if I could handle it. I thought I could, but you never really know until you're in there and you're doing it and you've seen your, 40th corpse and you're starting to become more comfortable.
So what did you begin to learn about the funeral industry as you went to work at the Westwind Cremation and Burial out in Oakland, right?
In Oakland.
You began to learn what? What struck you first about your experience?
I think the most powerful, I guess, emotional thing to me, and logistical thing, I guess, as well, is that I was alone there most of the time. It was a big industrial environment, two big industrial cremation machines, and I was the last person that was handling any of these dead bodies, whether they were going into the cremation machine or whether they were going to burial. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, a family would have a viewing beforehand, or they would
want
to witness the cremation or come in and see the cremation begin. But for the most part, it was just me. So there was no ritual, no family interaction. And that started to feel weird and wrong to me.
It was you and not the family in those final moments with these people.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can be respectful, which I was, and I always tried to care about the person and find out a little bit about them. But at the same time, it was my job to be efficient and cremate these people in the most efficient, quick way possible. And that doesn't really lend itself to ritual and meaning around the death.
How quickly did the job become a job as opposed to working with these bodies as the last person to deal with these people?
It's both. It always stays both. There's always going to be people who are either your age or who are babies or who look just like your grandmother who sneak up on you and make you feel emotions. But at the same time, if every person who came in, you completely gave yourself over to the emotion of their death, you would absolutely not be able to do it because you would be too wrapped up in your emotional life and not able to be the efficient person they hired you, Mike, the crematory manager, hired me to be.
So how did you feel after your first day and your second day on the job, and how was it managing any emotion you might have felt at that time?
I think for almost the first couple months, I was running on fumes. I was just so exciting. It was so thrilling. I was learning so much. I was feeling this connection to mortality that it was fun every day and thrilling and interesting.
Not many people would feel that way about it.
I don't know that they wouldn't. I think that as we're kept from death, actually being able to face your mortality and realize that time is short and that you're going to die is very energizing, because all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm finite. I'm going to be these people someday. Yeah. And how am I living my life? And then at a certain point, it kind of catches up with you.
Yeah.
And a couple months in, you say, wait a minute, how am I living my life?
Yeah.
Am I making changes? Am I doing what I should be doing? And you start to feel the existential weight and pressure over what you're doing.
Caitlin Doty is my guest. Her new book, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematorium. This is nothing like no antiseptic kind of book here at all. This is really a coming-of-age first-person story about her own first 6 years in the funeral industry based on her experiences at a crematory out in Westwood, at Westwood Cremation and Burial out in Oakland, California. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. And Greta from Overland Park, good morning.
Hi, Caitlin. I love your videos. They are fantastic.
Thank you.
What are your videos? Tell our listeners about those.
I have a wacky YouTube series called Ask a Mortician, where I answer people's questions about death and dying.
Yeah. Go ahead, Greta. I'm sorry.
It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, that's fine. So about 10 years ago, there was a documentary on PBS about people who actually were dying, an old guy, someone with cancer, and they made this decision to take care of their own deaths within their family. And I gave a speech about it in forensics. I was just fascinated by it. And so as I've been watching your videos and reading about you, I'm just wondering if you're seeing home deaths take off in the same way that home birth has, or is it still really contained to the people who are really invested in it?
I don't think that it's not quite at the level of home birth yet, but it absolutely is taken off. And part of what I do is to make sure that it's not a niche thing. And the idea what she's talking about, I believe the documentary was called A Family Undertaking. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you can find it, it's an incredible, incredible piece of documentary work. But the idea that it's legal in all 50 states to take care of the body yourself. In some states, at some point, a funeral director has to become involved. But for as far as just taking care of the body, having it at the home, washing it, laying it out for a couple of days, that's completely legal. And it really is for everyone, and it was for everyone. And so it's not a niche thing. And as of right now, it's kind of being billed as a niche thing. So absolutely, that the idea is to make sure that everybody knows that it's a possibility.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad
you
called, Greta. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you said, Caitlin, that you knew almost immediately after you began working in the industry that you wanted the public to see what I was seeing behind the scenes. What drove you to that?
I think the same thing I was talking about, the idea that when I was actually faced with my mortality, it was energizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it revealed things about the way that I was living and my relationships with other people, my parents, my friends, that I didn't realize was going on.
Yeah.
And just the idea that we can live our whole lives without people who are 60, 70, tell me they've never been to a funeral, never seen a dead body. 100 years ago, that would be crazy talk. You would have to be living in a cave somewhere to have that be the case.
Yeah.
So I don't believe that our distance from death necessarily helps us as a society.
Huh. Let's go back to some calls. And Linda from Kansas City, Missouri. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. I don't have a question, but I wanted to say thank you for doing this kind of program. I'm a psychologist, and I think we've become such a death-avoidant culture, and we don't know how to grieve, let alone face into our own potential and evident death. So I just think it's a great thing you're doing. I heard the earlier part of the program as well, so it's great, and I hope your book does well.
Thank you. And thank you for, there's so many allied professions, hospice workers, doctors, psychologists, therapists, chaplains at hospitals who are absolutely on the same path that I'm on and who are in the trenches. And they look out and they say, guys, what can we be doing about this? And public education is hard because sometimes people shut down when you want to bring it up.
What do your family and friends, what did they say when you first began doing this kind of work, Caitlin? What was their reaction?
So I was a medieval history major, and medieval death and medieval witchcraft was what I studied. So by the time I actually started working in the funeral industry, the reaction was kind of, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, go forth. You know, that's what you're doing. Of course it is. My parents are very supportive no matter what I do. I think my mother's a little happier that I'm New York Times bestselling daughter than revolutionary mortician daughter.
Yeah.
But they're always very supportive no matter what I do.
I should point out that Caitlin Doty will be sitting down with Katie Stover at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch, at 6:30 this evening to discuss her new book, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. To grab a seat, go to kclibrary.org. That's tonight at 6:30 at the Central Branch. That's downtown at 14 West 10th Street. Can you get sick working with dead bodies?
Well, if the dead body has a crazy infectious disease like SARS or Ebola, for instance.
You answer that question on your video series.
Yeah, you absolutely can, but that's so rare. You know, the number of people who have even had Ebola in the U.S. so far is, what, 3-4, maybe?
Yeah, right.
One person has died of Ebola in the U.S. So it's not like if your mother is out in Leavenworth or something, she died at home, she doesn't have Ebola, and she's completely safe. Mm-hmm. So all of the things someone would normally die of, like a heart attack or liver disease or cancer, that body is completely safe for you to be around and to handle.
You've said that you'd like to involve families a lot more in the process of preparing the bodies of their loved ones for burial, for instance. That's so important, and do you see that changing more and more? And it's so important. And why for people, Caitlin?
Well, I think it's so important because, one, this is somebody who has been in your community for your entire life, has been part of your life, and to just have the body disappear entirely doesn't really give you a sense that they're not coming back and that their death is real. Whereas actually seeing the body not only gives you the sense of, okay, I have to deal with this, I have to come to terms with this, this person isn't here anymore, but also an added benefit, I would say, is that you get to face your own death and say, okay, as this person is, so too I will be someday. I am also going to be dead someday. And again, how is that affecting my life? And then absolutely, it is growing in popularity. People are choosing to take care of the dead themselves. They're choosing more natural burial, where they can go out to a burial ground, just have a hole dug directly in the ground, body put in a shroud or decomposing casket. And I've been doing the public arm of what I do for, I guess, about 4 years. Mm-hmm. And really just in the last 2 years, the explosion of the media being interested, of people wanting to volunteer or take part or do it themselves has just exploded. So I think the time is nigh.
You're not crazy about embalming.
I'm not crazy about embalming. I think it should be everyone's choice. But I think in most cases, people have no idea what it is. It's a pretty invasive chemical preservation process.
What is it? Tell us about it.
It's a process that the blood is drained from the circulatory system of the dead body, and it's replaced with chemicals. And then usually formaldehyde or glutaraldehyde to fix the proteins and make the body viewable for longer. And that's when you see a body in a casket, in the suit, in the makeup, looking kind of waxy. That's an embalmed body. And if that's something you want for your family, or it's something your family's done for a couple generations, absolutely, it's available. Choose it. But people go into the funeral home and they just don't even, status quo. It's what you do. It's a $900 bill on the funeral bill, but you have to do it. It's for public hygiene. It's for public safety. And none of that's really true. That's just kind of the myth of the funeral industry. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what they sell. Caskets and embalming are two big things that make funeral homes money. And if you want them, it's capitalism. You should be able to get them. But most people just think it's what they have to do, and it's not what they have to do.
What are the stats nationwide when it comes to people being cremated, bodies being cremated versus bodies being placed in the ground? Do you have any sort of round numbers on that?
Sure. We're nearing 50%. We're almost 50-50 at 50. Well, yeah, we're almost at 50-50. So, and it depends on the state. You know, someplace like Arizona, California, Hawaii, going to be a really high cremation rate. Someplace like Mississippi, Alabama, you know, almost in the single digits as far as cremation rate.
So cremation is just is on the ascent. Then.
Cremation is hugely on the ascent. It's gonna take over death culture, I would argue, in the next 10 years.
And that's happened. Why do you think?
It can be pointed back to, I mean, some of it is economy. Some of it is the idea that we don't have, you know, why are we spending all of this money on the big casket and the hearse and the flowers and the burial and it's also the baby boomers. The baby boomers have the narrative from their generation that don't worry about me, you know, don't make a big deal, just cremate me. It's simple, it's more environmentally friendly, it's efficient, just that's what I want. It makes me comfortable. And that's what they grew up with, I guess, with that narrative. So now that they're actually beginning to die, they're making that choice, or they're telling their family that's what they want.
So a dream funeral for you would be what?
Dream funeral for me would be for me personally?
Yeah, sure.
For my family to be involved, my family and friends to be involved with my body somehow, whether it's just coming to sit with it for a while, laying it out, washing it, being very part of the process. And then I have a green natural cemetery picked out in Northern California, and I want my body to be transported up there, and I would love for them to dig the grave themselves and put me in it and just be in every way a part of the process.
Now, hearing you describe it, it just seems to make so much sense.
It does, and that happens a lot. You get it. So someone will say, "Ugh, I don't want to do that." And then you say, "Well, let me explain to you what this actually means." And you might actually maybe think it's beautiful at the end of the day.
A typical day for you at the funeral home was what? What did you do there?
Well, the funeral home in the book, mostly what I did was I got there in the morning and usually I turned on the machines and
they
I
were
set
loud.
Up, they were very loud.
It's very peaceful.
They roared,
before the machines came on and suddenly it was, yeah.
Again, these are big industrial machines we're talking about, two of them. And they would get up to 1500 degrees Fahrenheit and I would load in two deceased people to begin the day. And then I had all sorts of other chores. I would meet with families. I would file death certificates with the county. I would run errands. I would wash the van. If you work at a small family funeral home, you do everything there is to do.
I was surprised at how long cremation takes.
Yeah, it takes.
I thought it was like, you know, 5 minutes.
It just zaps you.
Yeah,
that would be
like
really
microwave.
Cool.
Yeah, microwave. What I thought.
Poof, ding,
what
ding,
I
thought. Ding.
Yeah, right.
No. It depends on the size of the person. If it's someone with more body mass or body fat, it can take up to 2 hours or plus. Or if there's a casket in there, even more. But usually, it's about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
And people put bodies in caskets and then cremate the casket?
They do, because the thing is, in most states, if you have a casket, you can't reuse it. So what are you going to do with the casket? It has to go. If you have a service with a casket, it has to go in the cremation machine.
You know, Brittany Maynard, the 29-year-old who had terminal brain cancer, chose to end her life on Saturday. And I'm wondering, what's your feeling about Brittany's choice? And is this a step toward more choices for those with terminal illnesses?
Yeah. So full disclosure, Compassion and Choices California, that shared Brittany's story originally. I'm on the advisory council for them.
Okay.
So just to let you know that. But I very much agree with her choice. And it's a real shame that she had to move to Oregon to peacefully end her life at the time that she wanted to end it, given that she had terminal cancer. And I think that it's tragic that she died and what she went through, but she was so brave. And I really do think this is going to be a sea change in how people feel about death with dignity laws countrywide.
Caitlin Doty's new book, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory. She'll be sitting down with Katie Stover at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch, at 6:30 this evening to discuss her new book. Go to kclibrary.org to reserve a seat. And boy, you're great to talk to. I sure enjoyed it, Caitlin.